We have our vice chair.
Yeah, you should. Ready? Okay. All right, I'll call the meeting to order for our retiree committee. I get a roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Mesqua, Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Yeo. Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Green. Jason Dadakis.
Here.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Great. And this is a time for visitor participation. Are there any visitors who wish to address the committees? Seeing none. Are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
All right. Great. Consent calendar items. One are the minutes of the committee meeting held on February 27th. Two are the 47B deferred compensation plan updated plan document. There are any members who wish to poll any of those items? Hearing none, I'll take a motion for those.
I'll move approval.
And do I have a second?
I will second that.
And call vote.
Roll call, Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, great. All right. Item three is the 457B Deferred Compensation Plan Investment Lineup Review and 401A Red Flag Fund Review.
Okay, we're going to just turn it over to Scott, as always.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Good to see you here. All right, so we'll dig into minutes from February 27. So at that meeting, we had on the agenda to review the red flag of the JP Morgan Midcap Growth, which is still red flag. Today's review is the fourth review, so it does need to show signs of improvement, or we need to remove it, or we need to have a good reason keep it that goes outside our investment policy statement. The 457 plan did not have any red flag or watch list items that needed to pay attention to. The meeting started with reviewing the minutes, as we're doing now. We did a market economic review, which we'll do here in a moment. So no official changes to the plan. The 401A and the 457 saw no additions, but we did add a couple of funds onto the red flag list. So the Vanguard International Growth, which has been with the plan for 20-plus years, has gone onto the red flag list. So that started its 12-month clock to show improvement. Again, we reviewed the JP Morgan and kept it on red flag. So that one has to show signs of improvement. We added another mid-cap, but this is a blend from the Scout. So that is on the red flag list. And then you might remember we went through some share class changes. These were sort of backward changes where we went to slightly more expensive funds, but net of the refund that goes directly back to the participants, they were getting a more efficient fee share class in their accounts. So here's the ones that were approved in the meeting. I'm going to have a little adjustment to that in a second. We'll show you this for a moment. And then on to the next page was in the 457 plan. So that had a series of five different funds where we changed share classes. So now, on all funds that we're using, we're using the most fee-efficient share class available to the district. Any questions so far? So other discussion items, all the other funds met or exceeded their benchmarks. The 401A plan balance at $173 million, so that's its highest level ever. 374 participants holding that with an average balance of $462,000. There are a good number of loans outstanding against that plan, 62 loans, a little over $1 million. Average loan is $17,000. And then we went through the fee disclosure. This is a snapshot fee disclosure. It covers a 12-month period. We've been with Fidelity for 6 months, but this shows what the numbers would look like over the course of the year. The dollar-weighted average expense ratio now is down to 33 basis points to employees, and then there's 7 basis points that goes back to those employees as revenue share refunds. If you have any questions about the revenue share refunds or that, please let me know. Date funds, we use a separate report to go through the target date funds. We will not be looking at those today because our primary objective is to review the 457 plan where we use risk-based funds. All right, let's look at the markets a little bit for the first quarter. So everyone should be happy when they see their first quarter statements. Don't look at your current balance today, but your first quarter statement's going to look pretty good. So if you look at the Dow, up about 6% for the year, overall now it's up closer to 3%. The NASDAQ up about 9%. As of Friday, it was actually up 1% for the year. We've seen a huge sell-off in some of those artificial intelligence and technology-based names. Tesla stock's gone from one of the best to one of the worst. And the great Apple has even fallen 15% so far this year. The S&P at one point up 10%, was only up about 2% as of Friday. It's had a couple of nice days to catch up some of its losses. And then if we go down a little bit further, Russell 1000 refers to large stocks. So there's an index that's a blend, then a growth and a value. Again, we're seeing growth outperforming. That wasn't the case last week, but certainly in the first quarter, you can see growth doing a little bit better than the value. When we get to mid-sized stocks, you see some positive numbers, not quite as good as large. Big is beautiful these days, so the larger stocks are doing better. And then Russell 2000 represents small companies. The blend benchmark up about 5%. Small stocks are definitely struggling more. Higher interest rates affect them more. A lot of the major corporations sold billions of dollars worth of bonds during COVID when interest rates were at a historical low. So the rise in interest rates has not impacted a lot of big companies like, say, Microsoft or Walmart. But smaller companies that need to go to their banks or renew their loans on a regular basis are definitely seeing that impact. Over time, those higher interest rates, should they stay higher, will cut into corporate profits. But we're not seeing that quite yet because, again, lots of bonds were sold in advance of this rise in interest rates. Second from the bottom, the Morgan Stanley Capital Investments, EAFE, that's Europe, Africa, and the Far East. So that's going to be looking overseas into developed markets, up about 6%. And emerging markets continue to struggle, only up 2% this year. And you can see it a loss over the last 3 years. Interest rates dropped dramatically in the fourth quarter of last year, as many assumed that inflation was done and the Fed would be cutting interest rates. A lot of people had expected the March meeting would show the Fed cutting short-term interest rates. So there was a tremendous move into fixed income. November of last year, one of the best bond market months in the last 50 years. Now as interest rates creep back up because inflation is being sticky. It's not at 6-7%, but it is hanging around at 3.5 or 4. You're seeing energy costs pick up a little bit, but wage inflation is definitely making a difference, and you're still seeing some supply chain issues that are creating higher prices. So year-to-date, the bond aggregate index down slightly 0.78% for the year. If you look at treasury bills where you're keeping your safe money, those are up 1.32. I'll get down to the third section there, Bloomberg Commodity Index. So those are going to be your commodity prices, gold, silver, oil, et cetera, up about 2% for the year. You can see still also down slightly. Oops, yeah, just I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong number. They're up about 9% over the last 3 years. So they got killed during COVID, and it'll come back nicely since then. All right, let's jump forward to the different sections of the S&P. So the S&P sector returns for the first quarter. So everything in the black, positive for the year. So biggest winner section so far is communication services. That's where you'd find Meta. Everyone hopefully knows is the old Facebook. Google also falls in that category. Energy off to a very good start this year. Energy stocks tend to be opposite the S&P. So when they're part of the S&P, when the energy stocks do well, it tends to be a hedge for everything else in the S&P. Information technology, so you can see that's coming in third. So Microsoft and NVIDIA with great starts to the year, but April's been pretty rough for both of those. And then financials, they like these interest rates like this because they can certainly make a lot of money on your money. They are not paying you a whole lot more on savings accounts these days, and they're certainly enjoying those 5% treasury bills with your money. Thank you very much. Consumer discretionary down towards the bottom. So Amazon and Tesla falls in there. You also see restaurants, car makers, say appliance makers in there. So a bit more of a struggle there. And then utilities and real estate are in the worst shape because those are affected by the higher interest rates so far this year. So that expectation that rate cuts were coming, people piled into interest rate sensitive investments and have since abandoned those, as it looks like you're talking about perhaps September as the first rate cut. Questions for me about the markets at all?
Would it be a slow interest rate cut if that were the case? It would be.
Step with the expectation is that they're not going to go back into cutting meeting after meeting. I think the thought process is they feel like they're a little bit restrictive right now, so they might cut three times and just kind of feel like they're a little bit more neutral and then see how things go. But right now, they still feel the need to kind of choke things off. But I think they want to get rates into the mid to high fours and maybe leave them there for a little while unless they see signs of a recession or if they see unemployment start to pick up. Unemployment stayed really strong, so they haven't been worried about that yet. So. But yeah, that is the expectation that they won't have to go fast. And you know, for those of us who are in the industry, we'd love for the Fed to be done with taking interest rates down to zero and then up to five. Maybe they could just keep them in the threes or fours and kind of stop being part of the news all the time. Okay, so we're looking at the 457 plan, which is the voluntary deferred compensation plan. So this is on top of the money purchase plan that employees are part of. So these percentages here we're showing you on page 23 are not return numbers, but instead where the money is allocated. So this is the plan that also has a match that comes from the district that was recently increased. So those top nine boxes are domestic equities. So in the top boxes, we go large, mid to small, top to bottom, left to right, value, blend, and growth. So growth companies tend to take their profits, put it back in the business to grow revenues. Value companies are typically more established and pay dividends out of their profits. And then a blend fund would either cover both types of companies or maybe companies that could be arguing to each side. Both sides like to claim that Microsoft, the world's biggest company, is a growth company. And value says, no, it's a value company. They both owned it with great success. You'll notice in the blend category, you also typically find our index funds. So the Vanguard 500 index, which is one of the biggest holdings, is represented there at 13, almost 14% of the plan. Then we have two principal funds that represent mid-size and small index funds to cover. On the outsides, in your growth and value, we have our active managers specifically there. We also have an alternative choice for those that prefer that in the blend categories, use an active manager in those blends. On the bottom there, below the nine domestic equity boxes are your overseas investments, so emerging markets, China, India, Brazil, Mexico, I used to say Russia, but they do not have a stock market currently. International equities is going to be your developed markets, so Japan, Europe, Australia. And then you see our specialty funds there, precious metals, real estate, and natural resources on the right, health and technology on the left. And then our asset allocation funds, which are going to cover both stocks and bonds in one category. Janus Henderson Balance is going to be domestic stocks and bonds. The Philly Asset Manager funds, they're named after a percentage, which represents what portion of the fund is in stocks. The difference is going to be in bonds and cash. And those are legacy funds that have been with us for quite a while as good performers. So the next section here is going to take you into fixed income. So about 22% of this plan is held in two guaranteed options. The Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund, which was terminated and annuitized as part of our moving away from Empower last year. And then the new option, the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund, in which 6% of the plan resides right now. So any contributions made to the plan that go into a guaranteed fund go into Vanguard. The Prudential is only a fund that you can exit money from. So traditional bonds, about 8% of the plan is in J.P. Morgan and the iShares Bond Index. So these are going to be 5 to 7 year maturities. These are more based on inflation than what the Fed is doing. But when you saw the benchmark for bonds, we showed a little bit down about 1% for the year. That's what we're talking about. And then you have the BlackRock inflation protected bonds. These are all government guaranteed bonds, but they tend to be longer in duration, 18 to 20 years. So even though they have an inflation protection, which changes the interest rate based on inflation, they're longer duration, so they're actually more sensitive to interest rates. And then outside of high grade is the low grade, the PGIM or Prudential Global Investment Management High Yield Fund is 1.42% of the plan. So that's going to act more like stocks. When the economy is doing well, they're going to do well. When the economy is doing poorly, they're going to do poorly because their ability to pay back that debt is threatened. Bonds typically do opposite of stocks. Bonds like recessions, droughts, famines, that kind of stuff, because interest rates fall during those periods of time, that makes your bonds more attractive. They can balance out your stock holding. All right, so on the page 25, so what we call asset diversification. So here we're looking at all of your funds ranked highest risk to lowest risk, starting with number one. We're ranking them just in terms of risk. The Morningstar style is to the right of that. The name, the symbol, what date it was added to the plan. So some go back a decade, some are more recent. The assets as of the end of March, and then what percentage of the overall plan that represents. The number of employees, or hashtag EE or pound sign E, depending on your generation. That's telling you what how many people actually hold the balance in that particular fund in bold. And then we've added in this new section you may not have seen before, but we give you the expense ratio of each one of the funds by prospectus. We now quote how much revenue sharing is paying back to participants. That used to be used to pay plan expenses. Now it goes directly back to the participants. So now you have a net expense ratio, and then the category average are the numbers after the bolder line on the far right, which are giving you what we're comparing those funds to. So some funds don't pay anything back. Some do, but all that money goes back to the participant that owns the fund.
An employee owns, how many do they tend to have per, participate?
About six in your plan. Yeah. Typically see someone with maybe one to two index funds and three to four to five active managed funds. They have a mix.
And that doesn't hurt or do anything to their costs, right? It's all based on each fund has a fee associated to it.
Yeah, so they get to kind of choose which funds they want on the merits of the fund, which includes the expenses. And so if they want to go very inexpensive, they can use all index funds that cover all the different categories. If they want to go more active manager, they can do that. They want to combine it, which seems to be what most people do. And they can do this. But everybody pays the same percentage based on their assets. So you choose the funds and individually, and then they can go from there if they want to change it. They're not locked in anything.
You see that a lot of employees changing frequently, or do they pretty lock in and stay away?
Most people, especially ones that I'm meeting with on a regular basis, it's more keep a portfolio, rebalance it once or twice a year, and kind of leave it at that. There are those within the district that tend to trade more dramatically. They will make moves all at once. I noticed somebody last week moved $800,000 in one day. So sometimes that happens, but most people are kind of sticking to the plan and letting it go from there. Are there others that maybe try to time the market and see how that works for them? But that's their choice. This goes on, continues on to a following page. So there's now 38 million in the 457. What do we start with, like 12 or 14?
Even less than that.
Yeah. And 289 total participants, including former employees of the district.
The one fund that people can't add to, but they can only withdraw from, is that continuing to see withdrawals, or is that kind of staying static?
No, it's seeing withdrawals. So the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund pays an interest rate of 1.5%, and the Vanguard Money Market pays an interest rate of 5.2%. So people are moving money fairly quickly out of
that. So will that give us any discount once that's completely liquidated, or will that give any?
No, it'll just be a positive for employees when it's finally gone. But on November 1st, Prudential and Empower are going to give us half the money that's still left in that Prudential guaranteed account. So for this plan, there'd be another $3 million that they'd wired to us that we'd put directly into the Vanguard Fund. And then in November of 25, whatever's left would go to the plan to move into Vanguard. So there was a two-year payout period that we agreed to get our money back from Prudential.
Employees have till that window to leave.
So, yes, that's true. They will not be in that fund after that particular day. But if they want out now, they have that choice. And many have taken that choice.
And we're communicating that to them.
Oh, yes. It's quite a few transactions. But it's person by person. And those are the two, 34 and 35, are your only guaranteed options. So if they leave, it's their choice to go into something. But the timing has been pretty good because you caught both the stock and bond market rallies since the conversion in November. Right, any other questions on any of this? All right, so we threw in the same chart that we showed you in the last meeting. Maybe I'll go to the 401A first at the bottom of the page. So these were two share class changes. The scout's going to come up later today because we're going to talk about that from a performance standpoint. But we actually did need to make these changes in order to become more fee efficient. Move this over here. So amazingly, you have the R6 share, which is the lowest expense ratio version of it, but it doesn't refund any revenue sharing. So the net cost to employees is 86 basis points. That's what we had. We moved to the I or institutional shares, which are 10 basis points more. So why are you doing that? Well, they refund 40. So the net cost of participants is now 56. Parnassus is 61, refunding 10 to 51. But if you go to the more expensive investor class, it's 82, refunding 40. So the net is 42. Mutual fund industry is eventually going to catch up and become more efficient here. But this is what we're trying to do with to make sure your employees get the lowest cost option. In the 457 plan, we're able to make this change on the principal real estate from R6 institutional. But these two funds were blocked. JP Morgan Emerging Market Equities. I need to not allow that in retirement plans anymore. So we included in the following pages email from JP Morgan confirming that. So we have that for our record. So we're still in the R6 shares. This was not a huge difference, 79 versus 74, but they'll stay with the lower cost raw expense ratio of 79. MFS was able to move to R4, so you increase the expense, but after the refund, it was lower. Delaware, which we'll be talking about today, we're able to change. But PGIM, the old Prudential, they've closed these Z shares. They're not allowed in retirement plans anymore. If you're grandfathered in, you're grandfathered in, but the R6 shares are going to stay in our plans. So again, the cheapest available share class is now the one that's offered. Questions on that at all? So here's our emails from both PGIM and from JP Morgan's. All right. So who wants to look through fund sheets for a while? We'll get a chance to be a little bold with some of these decisions today. So I hope everybody is ready to drop on their helmets and we'll dig into it. So we'll start with the items for review on the 457 plan. Is anybody like me to take you through the format of the Zephyr Style Advisor software that we use here? Is everybody comfortable with what we're looking at? Hearing none, I will move forward here. So this is not a red flagged category at all yet, but we are bringing this to your attention because the Delaware Ivy Midcap Growth has had a bit of a struggle of late. So we want to bring that to your attention. The Janus Henderson Enterprise is listed here because it's also an option in the plan, but it's had a good 3 years and good 5 years. So we're not concerned about that. But sometimes the decision process becomes, let's just merge the two together. So we want you to get the option to look at that. And then as Anif from my team noted in the text box there, you are seeing that share class change that we talked about a little bit ago. So if we're looking at the sheet here, you notice that there's 1.4% of the 457 plan, 144 people are using Delaware. Janus Henderson's 1.6 with 45 people holding that one. But you see, the reason we're bringing it to your attention is 3-year performance is they're about 5 percentage points on average below the benchmark. On the 5-year chart, which is the middle of your page, they're still in pretty good shape, but slightly below the benchmark. They tend to be a little bit more aggressive fund, but the downturn of 2022 is really making them struggle. Now, Janus Henderson Enterprise is a mid-growth fund, but it's stylistically is very close to a mid-blend fund. So let me interpret this box for you if you haven't seen it before. The upper right, Russell 1000 growth is large growth stocks like Apple or Google. The bottom right is going to be small growth stocks. Right in the middle is going to be mid-growth, which you can see is where our secondary benchmark is, the Russell Midcap Growth. Standard & Poor's Midcap Growth 400 benchmark doesn't look like a growth benchmark because it's very close to the center of the boxes here, almost as a mid. But S&P has a rule that Russell does not. You have to be a profitable company to be in their benchmark. Russell will throw you in there if just your market size works. So if you're a hot stock of the moment or a meme stock 4 years ago or an AI stock who decided that you're going from selling sandwiches to selling artificial intelligence, we'll put you on our benchmark for Russell. So you notice that Janus tends to be a little bigger in terms of size. They tend to be a little bit more blend in terms of style. So they tend to be a little bit more defensive. And when markets are down, they tend to do well versus their benchmark. When markets are up, they make money, but typically not as much as the benchmark. Delaware is certainly the fund that does well when things are good, but it certainly struggles when things are bad. 2020 was a great year for the category. See, Delaware kind of doubled the benchmark in terms of returns. It was okay in 21, but then got clobbered in 2022. Let's move our pictures here again.
You can just minimize that, Scott.
Thank you. Yes. So in 2023, you can see that Delaware actually did have a decent comeback, but 2024 in our first first quarter, has struggled a little bit. So options that we have are to always red flag a fund and put it on the watch list. We can replace it right here on the spot, or we can leave it be. I'm going to show you on the next slide here a 6 and 12 month, which is showing your recent performance, but it hasn't been really great for either particular fund. So Delaware did have a good 23 in 2020, but it certainly had a bad 22 and 24. Janus had a great 22 and 23, but is off to a rough start so far this year. So I would say at minimum it requires a flag, but we can look, if we wish to do so, at alternatives to replace it. Now, Jason pointed out earlier, we do have the same dilemma back over on the money purchase plan, where our mid-growth fund there, which is called JP Morgan Mid-Cap Growth, is also underperforming. You're going to see it's kind of a common thing these days, where a lot of these active managers are struggling versus the benchmark. So with the rally that's been so narrow, if you're a highly diversified fund, a lot of them are struggling. So even some of the options we're showing you on here as alternatives are underperforming the benchmark. So shall we explore alternatives for potential replacement, or shall we start Delaware off with a red flag today?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we red flag it and watch it.
Jason, Kevin, you guys are the employees, so you guys should have a decent say here.
I would support that. It's consistent with our policy statement. We very rarely pull a fund after it's initially shows up on our radar like this. So
it kind of seems par for the course on all these mids, right? They're all kind of struggling. So it would be a little too aggressive to just say, you know, you're done. Several years back, they actually did well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the ones that look good on the sheet are the ones that actually are more of the blend fund, the pure growth funds also struggling. So I have a plan that has the Vanguard Mid-Cap Growth Index Fund. It's struggling versus the benchmark too. So figure that one out. So I think red flag is appropriate if everyone else does.
Like the second.
We could, or we could, Trish's directory, well, sometimes we'll just, there's consensus, we'll record these and then have four circuit reading back. We'll do one motion at the end for all of them.
Okay.
So
great.
So we'll show you one more chart before we move forward. So these floating bars are the net performance of all of the funds in this universe. So this is the Morningstar Mid-Cap Growth universe of all funds that are in there. So year-to-date are the numbers in the first quarter. 1 year is 12 months back, so April of last year through March of this year. Then a two-year average, a three-year average, 4 and 5. And then the reason the box is a little bit bigger on the shorter term is you just have more variance of outcomes because it's a shorter period of time. But over time, you've noticed that Delaware has gone from one of the better ones, kind of up here in the top quartile, to it's drifted down below. Now, Janus is one of the best on the 2 and 3 year. In fact, it's probably tied for first on the 3 year, but struggled a little bit over the shorter term. So no fund, or rarely the funds do the market every particular time for them.
Typically, the index is often around the 50th percentile. But looking at this, it looks like the index is actually higher than most of the other funds.
I would say you would assume, logic would certainly hold that it would be the 50%, but I'd say looking at the data, it's probably closer to 70% than it's beating. So the Pareto principle is 80-20, that 20% of funds are going to beat the benchmark and 80% are not. I would say, and this is not hard data, but just anecdotally, probably about 70% of the active managers tend to underperform the benchmark. Mm-hmm. So, and we're in an environment now where that's all that much. Maybe this is,
the ultimate period of time to be an indexer because bigger has been better. So the bigger stocks have had the bigger impact. So index funds, you know, last year you could have owned seven stocks and forgot the other 4,000, but they were the seven biggest stocks. This year, two of those seven are really struggling. So it's a bit of a different story. But I think the indexing is benefited from that because it's a concentration. But if we see a broader market, then I think it gives the ability for stock pickers to beat the benchmark. We'll see if that changes. But we're kind of in between. Are we going to run Apple and Microsoft back up to their highs, or are we done with those stocks for a while is the next question.
All right. So on the day of mid-caps, we're going to get to look at more mid-caps here. So I'll switch you to the other plan. So this is our 401A items for review. So we are starting off with the Vanguard International. It does have a tendency to be a little bit more mid-growth oriented in its approach. This was everybody's favorite fund in the year 2020. So did about 4x what the market did that particular year. And then basically has been on vacation ever since. So they really struggled at that point. Now, sometimes what can happen when a fund outperforms this much, it can be a bit fatal for the fund because people pour money in there. They continue buying their favorite stocks, maybe past the point of their affection for those stocks. And then they tend to struggle with the higher caps of money. Vanguard doesn't have any of their own fund managers. They outsource this. So it's outsourced to two different managers. One of the managers that runs two-thirds of it has had some turnover in their management team. They still have the same approach, still very aggressive, but it's definitely been a struggle the last few years. They still get 3 stars out of Morningstar. 5 is the best, 1 is the worst. And then their qualitative rating, gold is the best, then silver, which is what Vanguard is. Then there's bronze, neutral, and negative. Overall, the team, the two different firms that run the money have been on the fund for 14 years. But the last 12 months, they're in the bottom 16%. The last 3 years, they're in the bottom 9%. But over the last decade, they're in the top 11%. So do we give them more time? Now, this has been a red flag since our last meeting. So this is our first review. We want to kind of look at how they're looking over time. Now, this chart here in the middle of your page is a 5-year chart. Both funds look fantastic. On the 3-year chart, MFS still looks fantastic. So that's not an issue here today. But we did want to point out the other option that's available in the plan. So now I'm going to switch over and look at 6 and 12-month numbers. 6 months aren't terrible, but 12 months has not been kind to Vanguard. Certainly the rally of the last year and a half, they haven't been part of. The MFS fund's done a really nice job over that period. So we do have alternatives to consider here in green, so we can dig into that, or we can try to give Vanguard a touch more time based on their legacy, but that's your call. Just to note, since I quoted Vanguard's MFS numbers are 5 stars in silver, and they're in the top third on 1, 3, 5 years, or the top 10 on the 10-year numbers.
How long have they been on our...
Just since the February meeting. Yeah, it actually said January on the sheet, but it's February. It's only been 2 months. Yeah.
Scott, on their 6-month result, or part looks a little better than their 12-month, which implies that their more recent performance has been a little better.
Yeah, so that 6-month period is going to be where the market rallied with the expectation the Fed was done, and that turned out to be correct, but also the Fed was going to start cutting interest rates. So they've kind of been part of that rally that started in October of last year. But when the market struggled in the summer of 2023, they were struggling as well.
These alternatives that you're looking at here, are these similar movements over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, so you have similar approaches. You notice if you look at the style here that all the funds in green and MFS fund tend to be pure large, whereas Vanguard does drift down to smaller stocks, which paid off in 2020, which really hasn't paid off since. But performance-wise, it's been pretty consistent among this bunch. The MFS fund, ironically, has the name value in it, but it actually over here is a growth fund. So That's why we look at some of these charts. But there's a lot of very good choices here if we did want to make a change, both index and actively managed funds. The one that we've probably used the most recently to add to plans is this Fidelity International Capital Appreciation.
From the companies you work with.
Yeah. So for some plans that have replaced other funds, they've gone in that particular direction. But maybe we're a bit premature on sending Vanguard packing, but it's certainly a choice for today if you'd like to make one. And I'll show you the upside downside capture. So generally, oops. Generally, when the market is doing well, Vanguard's your best friend. It's up 120% of it versus its peers, but only down 110% when things are rough. So again, market's rallying, Vanguard's doing well, but it hasn't been beating the market enough during the good times to make up for its underperforming the market during the bad times. And then if you look at your floating bars, it starts to get uglier here, where the 1 year they're in the bottom quartile, red is bad, 2 year and 3 year. And that's dragging down their 5 year number to be kind of middle of the pack.
In some cases, some of these categories, we've elected to have a more aggressive and a more conservative fund. Is this how we've treated this
Yeah,
category in the
and
past?
growth versus value too, even though they're really kind of growth funds, but very different approaches in what they buy. So I kind of like that. I would still argue for having two choices here. But yeah, that's what we've often done. And you'll see that in a second again on the mid caps is that we have a aggressive and a more moderate version. So MFS has done its job. It's just Vanguard's not the last 4 years. 4 years is a long time to underperform too.
So, kind of putting it through the lens of a more aggressive, large growth, foreign large growth, which one of these do you think aligns with the path of best?
Well, let's look here a little bit at first. I think the best trade-off overall has probably been that Fidelity fund. So you're getting a net best rate of return overall for still higher risk than MFS for sure, but only slightly higher risk than the benchmark. And here you're getting the highest risk next to the Vanguard in terms of that approach.
Okay.
But Fidelity Overseas is very respectable. Fidelity Diversified is very respectable. American Funds Euro Pacific Growth is the biggest international, probably the oldest there's ever been, but their performance has just been okay. And then ranking-wise, you heard about Vanguard MFS. The American Funds is 3 stars in gold. BNY has 4 in silver. Calvert 4 in gold. For some reason, Calvert funds never tend to work out for us. Fidelity Diversified International 4 in bronze. Fidelity International is 3 in bronze. Fidelity Overseas is 4 in silver. And then another fund is listed in orange because it is in the 401(k) plans, MFS International Growth. But I would be a little bit concerned to do that because we've got an MFS foreign large blend fund, and inevitably you're going to get people eating from the same kitchen, same research department. So I'd rather have a bit more diversification. But performance-wise, risk-wise, MFS probably the best. But if you want to keep, like Kevin's saying, you want to keep your aggressive going with your conservative choice, then I think Fidelity International is an interesting one.
Keep it red flagged. You'd look at it again in July.
Absolutely.
Right? It's cool.
Yep. Yeah. Now, generally, we like to see signs of improvement, but it's only been 60 days.
But over underperforming the last 4 years.
For sure. But that 2020 number kind of held it up. Kind of disguised that. So I think I said Fidelity was 3 in bronze. It's 5 stars in bronze.
But you said these guys consistently keep the same managers, have been doing it.
It's the same firms,
yeah.
But the people have changed.
Oh,
yeah. So the new people haven't been as good, but you could also say that their style is out of style, which is weird, but that's kind of happening.
Are you seeing any of your other clients shift this?
This is the only plan we have this particular fund in. This was closed to new investors because it did so well. So I haven't noted if it's reopened or not. There's one way to fix that. All right. So first tough decision of the day. Won't be the last.
I generally like Vanguard's company, but I just that 2020 number is masking a lot, and it's going to roll off.
It's only going to get worse. Yeah.
Right. And they haven't given any inclination of moving. So seems like the odds of them, even after, you know, if we gave it 3-6 or even 9 months of getting back within our metrics, it seems very low.
They're not offering you any hope, that's for sure.
And as we were just here a couple months ago, you know, we'll be right back in that position in a few months, looking at the same, probably exact same thing. Not going to help them.
I'm of the mindset that we should probably look for a change. I think I would make the recommendation that we would look at the Fidelity International Capital Appreciation. But I also think that the Fidelity Overseas is a good second option to look at based off what Scott has presented here. If it were to stay, I think the clarifying question, Scott, those are both the more aggressive of the options presented.
Yep.
Correct. So more in line with what we're replacing.
Yep. And they're both more expensive than Vanguard, but please note they do refund 35. So net of the refund, they're much more competitive, but still slightly higher than Vanguard.
And the fees, you're saying?
So everything you're seeing performance-wise here is net of fees. But note that if we're going to a higher expense fund, that we are aware of that.
And then comparing the two, the one we already have that we're not touching, and then these new options, it's risk and protection, or are they both?
No, I think it's different enough. So you've got kind of the blue square on the upper left there, and then the other two would be the ones on the upper right. So I think they're different enough in approach. And if we look at the upside downside capture here, so this is the one that you're keeping. This is the one you're talking about getting rid of. So a pretty good risk reward for that Fidelity, where it's giving you more than the upside and less of the downside by far. And then the overseas is this one, where it's giving you the same downside, but more upside than the benchmark. So in Wall Street terminology, that's alpha. That's what you want. You're going to use an active manager. You want them to be able to beat the market that way, either with less risk or with more return, or both. What do we want, ladies and gentlemen?
I support a change. I think, yeah, the Fidelity International Capital Appreciation that Kevin mentioned is a good alternative. I would support that change.
And make a motion for that, or is that we're just added to the list?
Unless there's any.
Does anybody feel differently? You want to make a case for another cluster? Rita says it's okay.
Yeah, we'll make that change.
Okay. The debate, everybody? So the easy decisions were last week. All right. So we're looking at big growth here in the 401A. So 12 months have passed since the JP Morgan mid-cap growth was flagged. So we do have to make a tough decision today. It's hardly a train wreck from a rating standpoint. It's still 4 stars in bronze, manager 10 years, 8 years. In the last 12 months, it's in the top third of all its peers. For the last 3 years, it's middle of the pack. 5 years, it's top 14th percentile. 10 years, it's top 10. So this one's a little tougher because it has had some really good performance. 2020 was very good for JP Morgan. Sorry, let's let you see that. On the bottom left there in red, 2023 was also very good for JP Morgan. But they got stung by 21 and 22 and then haven't shown much so far in 24. But I think you're going to see that in every fund we look at it today, as most of them have not had an index performance so far in 24 because of the factors we've described. So what's working against it is that it's been red flagged for a year, but note that it is still outperforming the benchmark over 5 years. But it's this number you're looking at that's got our attention, 4% per year, the last 3 years underperformed. So now, again, that puts it at the middle of the pack versus its peers, but certainly below the benchmark of the S&P Mid-Cap 400. Now, note again that style-wise, this particular benchmark, even though it's a growth benchmark from S&P, you have to be profitable to be in it. So it's almost a blend because some of these growth names are all on potential. If you ranked J.P. Morgan more against this peer benchmark, it's not great here, but it is still pretty good here. Recent performance, this is 6 and 12 months. So J.P. Morgan's doing better than its competitor, Janus, which is on both plans, and it's doing better on the 12-month as well. So similar to the benchmark, the secondary benchmark we've outlined. One other factor to mention, Jim Parton retired, who was the main manager of this fund, in March. So his sub-advisor has taken over management of the fund. She's worked with him for 9 years, but she has not managed the fund on her own before. So something to keep in mind. The track record is also retiring. Alternatives to consider, and you've seen some of these names already because they're alternatives for our friends over at Delaware. Funnily enough, guess who's got the best five-year number? The fund that we have. Better for this. So I'll tell you my thoughts about the alternatives before I waste anybody's time. How do we feel about replacing this, or do we want to try to buy it a little extra time outside of the parameters of our policies there?
And how would the committee go about doing it, Scott? Would we have to sort of state some reasons in the minutes?
We'd have to state some reasons. But there's not a lot of those reasons. It's just track record. I don't think there's any outside the norm numbers that we could look at. So it wouldn't be, it'd be quantitative, not qualitative.
Employees are in this one?
47. 1% of the plan. Well, that's still $1.7 million.
Do you have a 6 and 12 month bump for these prospective other alternatives? Just out of curiosity.
Often we do. I apologize, we don't in this particular case, but that's a great point. Often we do.
Thank you. It's,
I mean, you can look at the 12 month is here. So you can see Janus has actually been a bit of a struggle. J.P. Morgan's been fine on the 12-month. I think I said it was 49th percentile, so it is above average on its recent form. I guess you'd have to build your case on that. But on the two-year, you can see they're still in the top quartile. The three-year, they're in the second quartile. So it's not Vanguard's fund by any sense that we were looking at today. It was pretty ugly 4 years. It's been better. It's just not good enough.
But within its peers, it's not terrible.
No. Yeah, it's giving you hope. It's under this pile here. It's under this pile here. It's very similar to that yellow benchmark. The Morningstar still likes it a lot, but you're losing your manager. So yeah, that feels kind of like a tiebreaker.
Manager could be special.
Could be. I have to go on the numbers that we look at. It might buy it in my account, but I can't buy it in your account.
If we were to consider alternatives, Scott, would you any stand out to you?
The ones I kind of settled on were Philly Growth Strategies and the Virtus Car Midcap Core, which drives me crazy because it's a core fund, but does everything to act like a growth fund. T. Rowe Price we use in a lot of plans, but that manager is set to retire later this year. MFS has been a good fund for some plans. And then you have the index fund, Philly Midcap Growth Index, but it's underperforming the benchmark, so I don't think that does us any good. I argued with myself about Virtus versus Fidelity, but ended up thinking that Virtus is also more of a mid-blend manager, so very similar to Janus Henderson. So this is Virtus. This is our other fund that we're keeping. So it felt to me that if we were going to use one of the two, the Fidelity might be a better way to go. Ranking-wise, Virtus is 5 stars in bold. Fidelity is 5 stars in bold. So pretty highly rated.
Yeah, I agree that the Virtus seems a little too much like the Janus Henderson that we already have.
So. And even says core in its name, so.
I think J.P. Morgan's kind of, it's going to be hard to justify, I think, keeping it, which was probably shown us enough that with a management change, that's more uncertainty.
Yeah.
So I'd be supportive of replacing it with the Fidelity growth strategies. It's just forming like, you know, like for life as we can.
Yep. And it does get a rating from Morningstar on its process is above average. Its team is high, their highest rating, and Fidelity itself is above average. So this is a newer fund, 7 years old. They've had a good start. The share class itself is less than 5 years old, but it'll hit its 5 year set. They tend to be a little bit bigger in stocks, focus a little bit more on dividends and stocks that buy back their shares. So. It's not going to be quite as aggressive as J.P. Morgan, but it seems to me that it's a better fit.
Morningstar, that's not the view.
5 stars in gold, so that's their highest rating. So both those alternatives have a 5-star in gold rating. So you're in good shape with these next.
When you depart from a plan, then the employee is just notified, and then they have to relocate those assets?
We set a date. Since we're staying in the like category, we set a date in the future, typically 45 days after the board approves it. So they'll stay in the same category. If they do nothing, they'll go from the JP Morgan into the new Fidelity fund without having to do anything. If they wanted to in the meantime, because they have to get that 30-day notice, as you said, they can choose something else if they want to.
That's a good choice.
Yeah. We're going to follow. Okay. All right. Good day to be Fidelity. Every day is a good day to be Fidelity. All right. So one more mid-cap, if we can stand this. Mid-blends, this is a combination of growth and value. We red flag this in the last meeting, so it's only our 60-day review. For reference sake, the principal mid-cap S&P 400 index is on top of the S&P mid-cap 400 benchmark. That's what you'd expect, but Carillon Scout is underperforming with a little bit less risk. Scout had a good 2020. They've had a good start for 24, but for 3 years in between, a bit of a struggle. The 5-year chart actually looks fine. So this is 5 years for Scout. So they're on the capital markets line, right below the benchmark with less risk. It's a 3-year that it's issued. 3 stars in bronze for this fund. Their 3-year is 79th percentile, so it's the bottom 20%. But their 1-year is 28th percentile, so the top third. Long-term numbers are good, but the 3- to 5-year numbers are different. And then this is a 6- and 12-month. So the good news is Scout's beating the benchmark in the last 12 months. There are alternatives to consider. I think we all looked longingly at the Madison Midcap Fund last time because it's beating everybody so significantly. So that is still an option out there, but Scout has improved enough that we can keep it flagged, I think. I don't think this is an obvious replacement, especially because we're early into the watch list process, but there is somebody out there to consider if you want to do that.
Personally, I like the approach of we only give it 60 days so far. I'd like to maintain a red flag on it, keep it
on our watch list, and we'll come back to alternatives and see if performance is maintained.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's year to date performance. Well, it's standard list.
Okay.
Yeah, and I should have shown you this one so you can see here today. Scout's beating everybody at the moment. The 1 year is pretty solid. It's the 2 to 3 year that's kind of a problem. But unlike some other fund that is showing lines. Okay, so it sounds like we're keeping that when red's flat. All right, so that is all the items for review. Everything else here would be items for consent. Were there any funds anybody took issue with on items for consent?
I don't think so.
All right, well, that concludes my portion. Are we going to go back through the decisions?
Yeah, should you want to have to read them?
Okay, for the 457 items, the Delaware Ivy Mid-Cap Growth, we are going to red flag. For the 401A items, the Vanguard International Growth is going to be removed and replaced with Fidelity International Capital
Appreciation.
Sorry, my shorthand is. For the JP Morgan Mid-Cap Growth, we are going to also remove and go with the Fidelity Growth Strategies. And we are going to keep red flagged for the Carleon Scout Mid-Cap.
Motion.
Second. I'll second it.
Any other discussion? Okay, call the vote, please.
Roll call, Director Wagan?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes. Yes, did you get that?
Yes, thank you. Jason Dedicus?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
So, chair direction to which items will be agendized on the consent calendar. Place all of these on the consent calendar. And are there any announcements or reports? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.